Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sangang namassami. So I thought to reflect a little on the quality of faith in Buddhist practice. So Buddhism is not being a religion of belief, but of inquiry. And then often people wonder, well, where's the faith element in it? Often, you know, in other religions we're called to believe something, and then this is our faith, this belief is our faith. And yet in Buddhism, then we're not called to believe anything, we're encouraged to inquire and find out for ourselves. So sometimes the faith element can get a little bit lost there. It's not associated with belief. Faith doesn't need to be associated with belief, particular belief. So all we need to have faith in is that there is something to strive for, that there is something to result in the spiritual practice, that are worth finding, something worth finding through spiritual practice of one kind or another. Dhamma practice or a faith in the path of inquiry rather than having a path of belief, a faith in inquiry or a faith in the open mind, faith in our mindfulness, our sensitivity, open-mindedness, ability to inquire, our intelligence, our wisdom, our compassion, faith in these qualities. If I can find them beautiful and we have faith that we're capable of uncovering these within ourselves, of developing these things for ourselves, and if we do this, then we feel happier as a result. Then this will generate faith. It was often the results of practice, however small, that will urge us on, or disenchantment with the pleasures of the senses, seeing how the more we get, the more we want, and end up addicted to some trip or another, or hooked on something or another. As soon as it goes away, then we go down. We get fed up with the ups and downs of it all. Onto something more steady, reliable. So we have faith that exists. Have faith in mindfulness is a good one. Faith in being in the present moment. And developing this is such an enjoyable state, just to be there in the present. And then, where does that take us? In order to become more in the present, then we become willing to drop our desires for the things of the future, or our regrets over the things of the past, in order to stay in the present. In order to be really present and clear, bright mind, and we become interested in the quality of our own attention in the present, our own openness in the present, or softness, or whatever. We could begin to get in touch with that, enjoy that, enjoy the quality of our own mind rather than the objects within it. Become less important. And so we can have faith in just through our own experience. And then this path of inquiry just then takes us further. Become interested in these qualities of mind and how to keep them, how to promote them, and live in order to sustain our mindfulness in a way that sustains it. So, I remember when I was a layman and I went on a retreat, a meditation retreat, and I got a taste for this quality of mindfulness, being in the present. And I was in this left this retreat, and at the time I just embarked on an extremely passionate relationship with somebody, and I returned to this person and realized that very soon that how obsessed my mind would become with this person, his sensuality. Going for a walk in a nice park in London, and then just thinking, sort of mind full of this lady, images of this lady, just thinking to myself, oh gosh, you know, what have I done, you know, where's my mindfulness, I couldn't establish myself in the present. So it's a very this can make it a very natural path, it's a very natural way. I mean, I have to try to give something up. I just come to prefer something else. Have faith in something else. And then if we attach this faith to objects, say like a picture or something that reminds us, a picture of the Buddha or an image of the Buddha, and then we can further empower this faith. You know, we gather all the things of the tradition around us and keep reinforcing the faith in the tradition or the practice in this kind of a way. Committing ourselves, making further commitment, making deeper connections as we go along. And I tend to encourage this not because I want people to support the monasteries or whatever, or get more involved particularly, but it's something that I rather regret. I mean, I went for years to monasteries and sat in the back row of the talks and listened very intently, and I think was very hesitant to get involved. I regret that. Actually, I found something very worthy of faith, and something very beautiful, something very generous. So I need to have been so wary. Those are the days of a lot of religious cults around in those days. Perhaps there was a bit of hesitance there. You're seeing these kind of strange things, monks bowing to each other, or people bowing to monks, and thinking, gosh, you know, these people must be so special, and you know, I could never be like that. And also sometimes my faith not disappearing. A monk didn't behave in a very beautiful way. A monk got angry with me or something. That's very good. So I said, careful not to attach our faith to particular individuals, but to attach it to symbols of the practice. It's a very skillful thing to do. This can bear a lot of fruit in the long run. To have these things around and to relate to them with respect. To put flowers on your shrine and so on. And help one to generate inspiration, and yet it needs to be an inspiration in the practice rather than inspiration in particular people or places or traditions even, just to go beyond that. See that these things always have their difficulties or their flaws. If we can establish faith in this way, then we can begin to take things more on trust. So if we begin with the path of inquiry, but then perhaps we can begin to take things more on trust from somebody or from their tradition, and this speeds our progress very much so. You know, you keep the precepts out of faith, not question, then, for example, then we avoid a lot of doubting and vacillation around these things. Something is, we recognise, well, yes, it's keeping the precepts, yes, it's a good thing to do. I have faith in that. I have faith that will bear fruit in the long run. And not to doubt it. And to have these things as such, the shrine is a kind of symbol of our commitment to these things. So this is all ways in which we can further ourselves. There are times we probably all realise that we have too much faith. This is also possible to have too much faith in something or somebody. It's quite possible. And then we feel let down and say, was the problem with the person or the thing, or is the problem that we had too much faith? We fell in, we kind of got into a bit of a dream over it, a bit starry-eyed over something. So this is what the quality of faith is like in Buddhist practice, satta, faith. And it can become a very, very powerful thing within a Buddhist culture. I can see how this can be a very, very powerful thing. Another source of it actually in Buddhist culture is the act of offering alms or food to monks in village life in places like Thailand or Sri Lanka or Burma. People do this actually to gain good luck in life. There's this reputation, if you offer food to monks then you have good luck, one kind or another. So we think, well, are these people just being a bit selfish really? But we are entering into spiritual practice for our own interest as well as that of others. Spiritual practice is not seen as a self-sacrificing thing. So people gain faith from this because it works. It's as simple as that. And in one way, this tradition has lasted as long as it has because this practice works. People offer food to monks and they end up having good luck. They're the ones in the village who have good luck in one way or another, remain healthy or get a chance of a good job or whatever it is, all kinds of things. They seem to have good fortune in life. So in some ways this is what's been sustaining the religion for all these years and continues to sustain it in this kind of rather mysterious way. People developing faith in a rather mysterious way. Kind of magical things as well that can happen in Asia, or the people remembering their past lives. This can also happen. There are documented cases of this. And this could be a source of faith. There's a case of a man in Sri Lanka who, as a young boy, he remembered how he had died in his previous life. And his death turned out to have been an unsolved murder case. So in his previous life, this man had owned a post office in Sri Lanka, and a robber had climbed in through the window and shot him and taken all the money in the post office. And this little child could describe exactly what happened, where he'd lived, and so on. And he could describe what happened to the police. So it's a very, very interesting one. Often people see signs of somebody acting in a way that would reveal that they'd remembered something from a previous life, often around monasteries actually. a little child will walk into a monastery having never been there before and bow to the shrine and not having seen anyone do it, or how did this child know what to do? Well, this kind of thing would need no explanation in rural Thailand, because they'd just think, oh yes, well he's done this before, he knows what he's doing. And often the things around the spiritual life that seem to have this kind of memory associated particularly strongly, leave a particularly strong impression from one life to another, which again is in line with the teaching of the Buddha that it's our wisdom and our morality that leaves the strongest impression on our minds, through emptying our minds actually. And then that emptiness, in a sense, what we could say, would go on into our next life, a source of emptiness, freedom. And this is magical. Some of the magical things one can see in a place like Thailand can generate faith if one's open-minded enough. So it can be hard to believe in these things at the beginning, but then that fact in itself can mean that if one comes to see something for oneself, just with one's own eyes, and one can't explain in any way at all, then you can have faith. Oh yes, there's another dimension here that I just hadn't recognised. The mind opens up to possibility of another dimension. So the phenomenon of relics, for example, where the fragments of bone from a funeral pyre of a monk or a lay practitioner will turn to crystal and can multiply. And these things can be put into sealed containers in big monuments. And you see these people over the years see these crystals grow and multiply in this sealed container. These things can generate a lot of faith. They can generate a lot of delusion as well. If you're careful of these things, always be careful. They can also generate a lot of faith. There's something going beyond death, there's something in the way of surviving death. That can be what it's all about in the long run. Spiritual life, a way of dealing with this one. The only way, isn't it? Perhaps we can only have faith at the beginning that there's something past the grave. There may be something past the grave. And if we don't, then what's life all about, really? If we can't see anything beyond that, then it becomes pretty shallow experience, aren't it? Much to it, really. It's short and relatively short human life. If there is the possibility of something beyond, then it can be a real priority, can't it? You can have faith that that's the case, some way or another. And we can do this as well through the practice. If we see that the body is not who and what we are, then we can see this for ourselves, this possibility. And this can give us a huge amount of faith and drive in the practice. Give it tremendous importance in our lives. Or can do. It can be difficult as well. We can be complacent, and this is often a sign up in Buddhist monasteries in Thailand. A cartoon, a little picture of a baby saying too young to meditate. A little picture of a young boy playing and too playful to meditate, and then at school and too busy to meditate, and at work and then too tired to meditate, or too in love to meditate, meeting the partner, and then and then getting older, too tired to meditate, and then the picture of the grave, and too late to meditate. You can always, keep putting it off, can't we? It always seems like a kind of extra, like, oh well, yes, well, you know what, I've got everything else sorted, then I can get round to that one. It's a kind of added, like, cream on the cake or something. If we really realise the significance of it, the importance of it, then it's not just a cream on the cake. It's, you know, we're willing to sacrifice all kinds of things. You can see the importance of it and the value of it. Yeah, we, and yet, you know, you get the results. Yeah. Become very highly motivated, have a lot of faith in it. Yeah. And through intellectual inquiry in this way, we can develop a lot of faith, and value the practice. And see how clear the Buddha's understanding of life is. It's true that one can develop faith through intellectual inquiry, but then one has to have tasted the results of the practice in order to really overcome the doubt. And that kind of the faith of a person who's read a lot will also have a lot of doubt associated with it. A two-way thing. You tend to fail them in difficult times. They're not very reliable, enduring. It needs to go deeper than that, deeper than an intellectual understanding. I can understand intellectually that that's the case, that it needs to go like that. So, offer that one for your reflection.